Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Now, raising a child is a difficult job at best, but parents who have children with emotional, behavioral, and are learning problems find they need help, and often professional help. So here's where we talk with people that are knowledgeable on all things involved with struggling young people. The topic today is learning to live again, one girl's journey towards recovery. And we have two guests on. One is Emily, and Emily's sort of the star of the show. I hope that doesn't make you nervous, Emily, but glad to have you here. Glad you consented to take the time.
Yeah, I'm really grateful you guys are willing to have me.
Okay, well, Emily's a former student at a wilderness therapy and a therapeutic boarding school, and she does a blog about her experiences and was generous enough to share with her on Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. And Carrie is here to help out. Liz, you want to tell about Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie Weatherhead, she's the Director of Development at Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative, or Saving Teens now. She is a nonprofit management consultant and specializes in helping organizations that serve at-risk adolescents, and has been working with Saving Teens now for, about 8 months. Her management background is in community organizing, nonprofit management and development, and program development and implementation. And full disclosure, I am with Carrie on the committee to help plan the next fundraiser for Saving Teens right before the NATSAP conference in February. So I'm really, really love working with Carrie and really glad that she's here today. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you for having us and sharing Emily's story.
Okay, well, let's get right to it. And I want to start with Emily. How did you end up in the therapeutic program? So I guess this is your chance to tell your story as much as you'd like to.
There was a lot of reasons. I had a history of sexual abuse from a very early age, and I didn't want to share it with anyone, and I thought that it was my fault, and so I kept it inside, and that led to me acting out in all sorts of different ways. When I was in seventh grade, I started drinking and got into different substances after that, and I started to depend myself on that, and I thought that I couldn't get through things if I was sober, and I couldn't make friends if I was sober, and I wasn't fun if I wasn't sober, and there were just, like, all of these large thinking errors.
Sounds like you really did a number on yourself.
Yeah. And overall, like, my self-worth just didn't exist. I didn't care about myself at all. I was continuously putting myself in dangerous situations with people that I should not have been involved in that were dangerous and too old. And for some reason, I thought that that meant that I was cool. And all this time, I was self-harming on and off for 4 years. And I had attempted suicide several times and been placed in a psychiatric hospital twice. But I still thought that I had everything under control. And I guess, like, my thing was that if I was going to die one day, I should make life as fun as I could, and for me that meant putting myself at risk almost all of the time, which really wasn't that fun and wasn't very rewarding, believe it or not.
It sounds like you were in a real downward spiral. I bet it was getting, things were gradually getting worse.
Yeah, and I mean, my parents could tell that I was spiraling down, but they didn't know to what extent, because so much of it I had kept inside, and then little pieces started to come out, and they realized that I needed help, and I was sent to wilderness.
Could your friends, Emily, did you have friends that also saw you maybe getting into trouble? I know you were associating with some people that you didn't feel weren't the most healthy for you, but did you have other friends that knew you and were worried about you?
Most of those friends I had kicked out of my life. I pushed away everyone that actually cared about me, and so the people that I was spending my time with all encouraged it. There were a few friends that could tell that I was spiraling down and wanted me to do better, but they tried many different times, and they would try talking to me and telling me what was going on, and it didn't matter, and they were a loser because they didn't know how to party, and they didn't know how to have fun, so why should they stay in my life? So really, there was no one.
So finally, your parents were there and stepped in and did something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was your relationship like with them, you know, before you actually ended up going to the wilderness program? What had been going on?
My mom and I only spoke when I needed something, and my dad and I couldn't have a conversation without screaming and yelling and name-calling. And so most of the time I wouldn't be home, and if I was home, I was high or drunk, and we just, didn't talk at all, ever.
Well, how did they get you to the first therapeutic program?
I was woken up. A treatment term for it is being gooned, but I was woken up by two strangers, and they escorted me to Utah. We drove from Los Angeles to Utah.
And, you know, I'm just going to ask for a moment, Emily. I got a word that could you just try to speak up just a little bit, because it's a little hard to hear you. Thanks. So you were woken up.
Yeah, I was woken up by two strangers, and they said, "Your parents have sent us. We're here to get you help." And then they got me to the car, and then my parents came out, and I sort of got to say goodbye. It wasn't like a real goodbye, because they knew that my parents needed to stand firm, and if I had my chance, I wouldn't have gone. So they drove me from Los Angeles to Utah, and then I was taken to the base camp of my wilderness.
Okay.
Well, give sort of a short synopsis. You went to the wilderness, and just a short summary. We'll get back into it in more detail. What you were there, then you went to a therapeutic boarding school, or you use schools, plural. Maybe you were to more than one. Could you tell us a little bit of what happened once you got to Utah, to the wilderness base camp?
Yeah. Well, wilderness was a very big challenge for me. I'd always kind of been a princess, and I was very bratty and snooty, and so I wouldn't do anything that they told me. I wouldn't put on my coat because I said that I couldn't wear orange when it was probably 15 degrees outside, and I refused to eat the food because I said that it was disgusting, and then they said, "No, you have to eat it," and I spat it up. I just kept telling them, I said, "I'm not doing this. This is not for me." And I was very, very resistant. But then I started talking to the therapist there, and I had never, ever had a real connection with a therapist. And I had been to probably 15 different therapists at different times of my life. And I realized that I actually really enjoyed talking to him. And I felt like I could trust him, which was something that I never had with people. And so it was once I started opening up to him about everything that I was holding in, I sort of started to work, but I was still very hesitant to actually change anything.
It sounds like your parents, they tried everything else, and this was sort of the last try.
Oh, yeah. They had tried everything. It just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I had my heart set on messing up.
Okay, so you managed to get through the wilderness, and how did it wind up? Were you a success or modest, or how was that?
I don't believe that I should have graduated. I didn't deserve it. My last couple weeks, I knew I was leaving soon, so I kicked up my heels and said, not doing anything. And I think that I wish that I could have really finished that program, but I don't think that I deserved the full graduation.
Well, it takes time. So from there, you went to a therapeutic boarding school. Was that also in Utah?
Yeah, that was in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. And how long? Go ahead.
I was there for about 16 months, and the first 6 months were spent doing absolutely nothing.
You were, I think the term is treatment resistant.
Or tenacious.
I had it all figured out. And I said to my, like, I have my old journal, and it's hilarious. I would write, and I would say things like, oh, well, I see where they're coming from, how some people shouldn't drink and do drugs and sleep around, but, you know, for me, like, I can just do it in moderation. Like, I have this all figured out. I don't know what they're talking about when they tell me that I have all of these problems. Like, I'm fine. I'm happy. And so I was really convinced with it, and I would tell myself, I was like, the second you get out, like, you can go back, just don't do anything, don't act like you're changing. Like, they'll have to get rid of you, like, you're not going to change, so maybe they'll just, like, give up. And I was so wrong.
At what point did it turn for you?
Well, I went on a home visit, and my first home visit, and that's, I had it all planned out. I was waiting for my first home visit, and that was when I asked my parents to pull me from the program.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they had actually started to consider other options, and then they sent me back and they said, you have to go back this time and we'll look into other options. So I was like, okay, I'm totally going to get out of here. And then I was supposed to have a visit in the beginning of September, and my parents refused to come see me. They said, we're not going to participate in this with the way that you're acting. You don't deserve a visit. You should stay there and figure this out. And right before my parents canceled my visit, I had this thing called a hot seat, which is where everyone in the program, all of the girls that I live with, all of the staff and my therapist sit me down and tell me everything that I had been doing that was affecting them negatively and affecting me negatively, and telling me everything that I had done that was then where my life was going. And at first I was like, oh, these people are so wrong, like, they're so stupid. And then when my parents canceled the visit, which my parents have never set boundaries with me, so I was in shock. And then I started thinking, okay, like, maybe I have some problems.
That sounds almost like a turnaround point.
Yeah, that was the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then what were the next 12 months for you like?
Oh, God. really rocky. The first, from that happened in September, so from September to January, it was just starting to figure out the beginning of everything. So I started to really process through all of my trauma. And my therapist called it putting the anger where it belonged, and, like, the shame where it belonged, because that wasn't my shame. And so that was, like, the main thing. We got a workbook on surviving sexual abuse, and that was where it all started, was when I figured out where everything was coming from, because all of these beliefs that I held about myself were things that those people had told me or things that those people had indirectly made me believe. And so once I started to really figure out what I wanted to believe about myself and who I was separate from the abuse, everything else sort of started to fall together.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting.
But it was, like, really rocky.
Well, you know, this is a really unique opportunity, I think, to be able to speak to somebody who's walked the path that you've walked, Emily. And, you know, I think that a lot of parents, when they are making this decision, they are just torn up with guilt. They're worried that whatever they're going to do is going to make their child hate them. Their child will feel abandoned. They will never be forgiven. They will irreparably damage their relationship with their child. What do you have to say about that?
At first, probably, I was furious with my parents. I had every intention of getting back at them. And I was like, oh, the second I get out of here, I'm going to be worse than I was before, and I'll show them. But I think at the end of the day, it made me realize how much I wanted to be home and how much I wanted to have a family. Being away from them was something that I had never done long-term. It had always been by choice. And so really being pulled away from that made me realize that family is the utmost important thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot thank my parents enough for sending me, because it saved my life and it saved our family.
Well, let's get back to that a little bit more later on. But back to just before you went, or the time before you went to the Wilderness Program, what would you like to share with other families that are maybe in a similar situation?
Oy, it gets better. It really does, which I never believed. But I think the main thing is get the help that your family needs and stay together. You know, whether you're separated, divorced, married, whatever, stay on the same page, because when I thought my parents weren't on the same page, that's when I tried to jump in and be on the same page with whatever program, because there's the smallest divide, your kid will see it, and they will drive that wedge right into it and make it a way bigger divide, and that's going to be their opportunity to pounce, so you don't want to give them that opportunity.
You described that very, very well in one of your blog posts about the divide and conquer, and the scheme that you did to try to get your parents to let you stay home. you presented that very well. It's a story that we've all heard, and it didn't work, fortunately.
Yeah.
And do you think, when you hear from other people saying, well, did your parents ever try outpatient treatment? Did they ever try this? Did they ever try that for you? What did they try?
I have seen so many therapists, I can't even begin to tell you all of their names. And I had been placed in a psychiatric hospital twice. And, I feel like there was others. I mean, it was just all the interventions of, like, okay, you're going to be grounded. Okay, we're going to take away your phone. And I was expelled from or asked to leave a school that I was attending. And so they thought maybe starting me at a different school would help me start over, and that didn't work. And so it was all of these different things that mm-hmm. I just didn't care, you know? Like, I went to therapy, and I would sit there and put my headphones in and wouldn't talk to my therapist at all.
So you really feel like they tried everything.
Oh, yeah.
Let's bring Carrie into this. Carrie, how did Saving Teens get involved with Emily? A little bit of that story.
So Saving Teens is a nonprofit organization that assists troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. And what we do is we help with some of the financial burden by offering scholarship and liaisoning with programs and other services, so that families who can't finance a wilderness program or therapeutic schools get some help from Saving Teens in order to help their child. Emily's father found us through, I believe, his own means, and helped us with a fundraiser a while back. And learned about Saving Teens through that opportunity. So when Emily was about to graduate school and wanted to be able to share her story, she contacted us and asked us if Saving Teens could help her share her story with the industry and the larger community of troubled teens.
That's wonderful. So that people could know, exactly what Saving Teens does and how they help. They definitely help kids. That's excellent. And Carrie, tell me a little bit more about Saving Teens. What are some of the other stories of kids that they've helped and ages?
We've helped young people from as young as 13 up to 18. We're able to fund a small amount of kids a year because it's quite expensive to support these kids in these wilderness and therapeutic programs. This year we'll be funding between 3 and 4 kids. And our kids come from a whole variety of different situations. Some are living at home. Some are estranged from their family. We have kids with addiction, and we have kids with anger issues, learning disabilities, anxiety, and the parents reach out to us and ask us if we can support them in any way. We have a very, very stringent application process that allows us to find families that are ready and willing and capable to embark upon this very, very long journey. And then when we start working with them, we make the commitment that we will support them, through the journey, through wilderness, through therapeutic boarding schools, through aftercare. So we generally stay with our families between 12 and 18 months. When they become a Saving Teens family, they receive an educational consultant that volunteers through Saving Teens pro bono, and they make a plan for the young person. And then we follow them every step of the way. So we negotiate with programs for scholarships. We give some of our own funds to help support the families. And then we determine the next steps. And then the next steps after that, and we've made a real commitment to sticking with the families throughout their care.
Well, that's okay, wonderful. Well, let's get back to Emily. What was the hardest part of the wilderness program? What first comes to mind as the hardest part? You could say all of it, I guess.
Showering.
No showers?
Besides the not showering and gross food, I think the hardest part for me was probably just having to sit with my thoughts. Because there was a lot of, it's called P time, which just means personal time, where it's you sit away from the group and have to journal and think. And I had never been able to sit with myself. And so every time they would call P time, I would like roam around, like trying to like find something to do. Like I just couldn't sit with myself. It freaked me out.
Mm-hmm. You had a hard time living with yourself. Then, a lot of your activity sounds like probably you were trying to run from yourself and for all these, whatever it was.
Oh yeah.
Did the wilderness program change the way you felt about yourself physically too?
Yeah, it impacted that. I think wilderness was more of the time for me to get everything out, and then the like changing the thoughts and behaviors and things was more at my second program. But wilderness definitely did help with that stuff.
Well, there are oftentimes wilderness used. I first started using wilderness with my students way back in the 80s. And it's a sort of a setup. It's not designed to cure or totally fix the kid or whatever you want to call it. But it's a setup, and I'm sure that was an important part of why you had further success.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk about the turning point. And were you to one therapeutic boarding school, or did you go to two?
I went to one.
Went to one, okay. Tell us a little bit more about that turning point. I think you were saying it revolved around when your parents refused to come for a visit.
Yeah. Well, it was the visit combined with the treatment intervention, but I had all of these girls that were living with me, and I thought that they, well, some of them I didn't particularly have a relationship with, but others I thought were some of my best friends, and when the treatment intervention happened, the girls that I thought were my best friends were telling me that I couldn't keep living the way that I was living, and they couldn't be my friend if I was acting the way that I was acting.
And that got your attention?
Home, yeah.
That got your attention?
All my friends at home, they just let me do what I wanted to. They were like, oh yeah, drink more. Oh yeah, smoke more. That's funny. Ha ha. You know, it was always encouraging the bad stuff that I was doing. And for once, I had these girls that were actually wanting me to have a real life.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Liz.
Oh, I was just going to say, and so these girls were very different from the friends that you had at home.
Yeah.
And did you find that, did you feel like these girls really truly had your best interest at heart?
Oh, yeah. The girls that I have met there, I have very, very, very close best friends, and three of us want to go on a backpacking trip to Europe. Another one came and stayed with me for a week 2 months ago. We're all still very close.
Oh, that's
you know,
wonderful.
That sounds... My daughter went to a wilderness program and then on to a therapeutic boarding school. This was years ago. And she felt like, particularly the boarding school, but also the wilderness program, those are some of the best friends she's made in her whole life and has kept in touch with them. And that's been years and years now. Sounds like you're along on that same type of path.
In June this year, I had the pleasure of meeting Emily along with the rest of the girls in her therapeutic boarding school while we did a 5K race down in Utah, and they were a tremendously supportive group of young women. They all came to the race with matching T-shirts on that they all made together. And then they supported each other throughout the whole entire race and took care of each other throughout the whole day. So I knew it was a special relationship when I saw them that day.
Well, that's impressive. Well, after you had you got the turning point, it sounds like you begin to say, well, maybe they've got a point. What happened then? That was about, the last 12 months of your time there? What was your thinking change and what insights did you get? I know that's sort of an open-ended question.
I started to realize that... Well, my therapist said to me, she said, you treat other people the way that you treat yourself. And so I started to look at all the things that I thought about myself, and like I said, like putting the shame where it belonged. But then once I started realizing that I cared about myself, and that I wanted a life, that was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was one time that I was sitting in therapy and I was crying and I said to my therapist, you know what? I would actually be my own friend. Like, I think I'm a good friend now. And she was surprised that I had said that, and I was surprised that I had said that. And she said, Em, that's a big deal. Like, that's amazing for you to finally be at this point. And I had never cared about myself and never cared about respecting.
Hello?
A point to everyone. And it hit me that I actually was a person and I deserved happiness and I deserved to be treated with respect. And so I started treating myself like I did deserve that. And
did you resist that thought, or was it a revelation as finally I figured it out?
I resisted it at first, not for too long, but it was more just, can this be real? Like, is this possible? Is it really possible to be happy without just being drunk or high?
At first, you didn't trust it.
Yeah,
at first you didn't trust it. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to build trust with myself. I mean, I know that that may sound weird because you are yourself, but for me, coming to the point where I realized that I had my own best interest in heart was a big deal for me. It was like recognizing the fact that I wanted to take care of myself and I wanted to protect myself and I wanted to make sure I was happy was huge for me.
I bet you felt better then too.
Oh yeah.
Okay, well, we have to take a 1 minute break for an important announcement, and stay tuned. This is Lon Woodbury with Liz McGee. We're talking to Emily with Carrie Weatherhead on the side, learning to live again, one girl's journey towards recovery, and we'll be back in 1 minute. Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA talk radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family. If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550 and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, strugglingteens, that's one word, .com. Well, welcome back. This is Lon Woodbury with Liz McGee, hosting the Parent Choices or Parent Resources for Struggling Teens. We're talking with Emily, learning to live again, one girl's journey towards recovery, and with Carrie Weatherhead with Saving Teens on the side. So my next question, Emily, is at this point, looking back on it, what are you most grateful for at this point?
The fact that I have a life again and I have a future. Because if I hadn't been sent away or if my parents had sent me away and pulled me, I was told that there would have been no possible way that I would have made it to see the age of 18. And now I actually really, really want to go to college and I really want to, whatever I end up doing, I want to have a job and I want to have a family and a future. And I think that that's something that I will forever be grateful for, is the fact that I was given the chance, a second chance at life, because I wouldn't have lasted much longer living the way that I was living.
Now, are you going back to school or are you going on to college? Where are you at in school?
I'm going into my junior year and I'll be going to just a traditional boarding school on the East Coast.
Nice. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
That is very exciting. So you really have some great plans, it sounds like. Do you plan to, when you go away to school, do you plan to continue to get some support and help while you're there?
Yeah, I have a therapist that I'll be meeting with once a week. She's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I really like her.
That's great. Well, Lon, I wanted to ask a few more questions related to some of the stuff we were talking about earlier, because I think...
Sure.
it's really neat that, you know, to have somebody like Emily. And I think, Emily, for parents that may be going through some of the struggles that your parents had been going through with you, maybe it's nice for them to hear from you, you know, some things that will maybe set them more at ease, because it is such a difficult decision to make. And one of the things I sometimes hear is parents saying, well, you know, it needs to be her. I need to make sure that it's my child's decision to go. They have to want it. What do you say to that?
I mean, in some circumstances, I know some of my best friends from my programs did ask for help. But if you have a kid that's stubborn and hard-headed like me, your kid's never going to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Never.
And so,
even if they desperately need it or want it, I imagine.
Oh, no. I was never going to swallow my pride and ask for help. I thought I had everything under control. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are definitely other kids like me out there, because some of the girls that I went to school with were the exact same way as me and would never have asked for help. But I think if you recognize that your kid is struggling and they're the type to not ask for help, or even if you think they are the type to ask for help, I would get them help, because they may be mad at you for a week or a couple of months tops, but they're going to forgive you and they're going to be so grateful that you did it.
So you're not mad forever then? It's not something that be forever. Well, what about the other thing that you commented on? That you said was that, you know, your parents actually had a couple of people come to help get you to the wilderness program. And you know, I know that a lot of times people think, well, that's not right. That's mean. Those people are awful. They manhandle the person.
No.
You know, they're...
They bought me ice cream and talked with me.
Okay. So they weren't...
They were really nice.
They were nice people?
Yeah, they were so sweet. I was not the nicest to them, but they bought me ice cream and talked with me and tried to keep my mind busy, and they were trying to be, like, as supportive as they could. They were great people. Like, I wish I had treated them better. I do still feel bad for how bratty I was to them. But they were doing it because they wanted to help. It wasn't, I mean, some people say, like, oh, that's so mean. That's like kidnapping your own kid. But if my parents had taken me...
Could they have?
What?
Would they have been successful? Would you have gone with them?
Oh, no. I mean, my parents couldn't even put me on a plane, because if they had put me on a plane to Utah from Los Angeles, I would not have gotten on the plane, or I would have caused a scene and the plane would not have been able to take off. Like, there was no way that there was any other way to get me there besides driving me with those two people.
Mm-hmm. So that was really then a good option for your parents to choose.
Yeah, it was the best.
Okay, and so for the people that think that that's mean and all those people are mean, you're saying no.
I mean, it was a little frightening at first, as it would be being woken up by strangers at 4 a.m, but they do everything that they can to make you feel supported and safe, and they are really good people that are just trying to help.
And it sounds like it worked for you, that it relaxed you.
Yeah. I didn't throw a fit, which was a big deal for me. My parents still tell me they were surprised at how calm I was in the car. I was bratty and snarky, but I liked them enough, and I, like, respected them enough not to try and, like, I was like, oh, no, they're too good. Like, I shouldn't even try and run. Like, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in my experience, that's, at least of the good transport officials, that's the typical one. The whole image of a couple of goons manhandling somebody, tossing them up and hauling them off is, it's not in the ones that I work with, and most of the ones that I know of. And so I think what you have is a pretty typical story for the quality professional transports.
Well, I think we hear a lot of horror stories, and they don't necessarily apply to the actual programs or people that we work with in the parent choice and parent choice industry, and wilderness is another one. And I don't know about your particular wilderness program, but oftentimes there's a lot of horror stories about wilderness programs being boot camps, and they're cruel, and they starve kids, and they, they're abusive, and so what could you say to parents about your wilderness experience if a parent's considering that, but they're worried it's going to be cruel to their child?
They were the nicest people in the world. Everyone that I met along my journey was so nice. And there were times that the wilderness staff probably should have just hit me over the head and said, stop talking right now, like, you're ridiculous. But
you were that bratty, snarky kid?
Oh, I was awful. I mean, I spat up my food on a staff shoe. He said, you have to try a bite, and I said, no, you can't make me, and I spat on his shoe because I wanted to prove a point. And you know what he did? He sat down next to me and said, we're going to talk about this, but not right now. Like, let's just sit and let you calm down. Like, he was not even mad.
Mm-hmm. How did you react to that? Do you remember?
I felt bad because I never felt guilty when I was mean to people. I thought it was funny usually, and like seeing him react, like when people react in a bad way, it's like, oh, I pushed their buttons, I want to do it again, ha ha, this is funny. But seeing him be so caring towards me, and then like we sat down and he asked me how I was doing. And mm-hmm. I was shocked, and I was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have done that, which is something that
I shocked
me to even think it, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just like everyone there is so caring. I mean, these staff, they work for 8 days in the field and have 6 days off. They put us above everything. Like, that means so much to me. The fact that they didn't do anything wrong. They should get to shower and sleep in a bed and not have to hike 5 to 8 miles a day or whatever it was, a ton of miles. You know, like, they are there because they want to be there and they want to help. And
well, that's great.
It's awesome.
That's great. Well, let me ask Carrie a little bit more then about saving teens. And you know, Carrie, maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about, you know, how does some ways that saving teens raises funds, raises support?
First of all, I think that, you know, of course, raising funds for our scholarships is a primary responsibility of Saving Teens. The more money that we're able to raise, the more young people that we can fund, the more teens we can save. But I think in addition, it's really powerful to be able to raise awareness about the therapeutic industry, about wilderness, about the realities of the wilderness programs, and therapeutic boarding schools and the industry, so that families who are scared and families who don't know where to turn next can, you know, find, you know, some sort of solace in Emily's story, in the fact that Saving Teens is there to support them. We are in the process very soon of starting a pilot parent support program for parents who are engaging in the thoughts of sending their children to wilderness programs or aren't quite sure what decision to make. So that will be coming up in the near future. And if you'd like more information on that, you should be able to look in our very new website soon. We have actually just launched a new website today, so you are welcome to look at it and learn more about Saving Teens. Our major fundraiser is in February this year at the National Association for Therapeutic Schools and Programs annual conference in Nashville. And it's going to be a fun event of music and food and revelry and lots of enjoyment. We also do a biannual appeal. So we do a summer appeal, which we just completed, and a November appeal that will be coming soon. And if you'd like to learn more about that, there's a sign-up sheet on the website that you can sign up to so that you can learn more about Saving Teens, receive our newsletters, receive information about Emily and her blog, and be able to participate in fundraising efforts and volunteer efforts, and be able to donate to Saving Teens. And our website is www.savingteens.org.
Okay, let's get back to Carrie because we still have about 10 minutes. And could you talk a little bit more about what now? You know, so you want to go to college now. How long has it been since you graduated from the...
you mean Emily, right?
Emily.
I graduated about a month ago.
Okay, so you're still pretty new at this outside living stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, but tell a little bit more about your plans and your hopes and maybe even some of your dreams. You say you want to go to college, but how real is that to you, and is it becoming more real?
Oh, yeah, college is for sure happening. My parents and I are already starting to figure out what schools we want to tour, and right when I start school, I get to start meeting with my college counselor, which I'm really excited about.
Do you have some ideas of what you want to major in?
Not exactly. I've always wanted to do something that helps someone else, like other people, and so I've been thinking for the past almost 2 years that I wanted to open up my own rape crisis center, because I think a lot of them are like stop and start, and I want to have one that follows through more. And like helps people throughout more of the journey versus just one piece of it. Because I think that when you're going through something like that, it's really hard to trust people. And so when there's constantly new people entering your life, dealing with this trauma with you, I think it'd be better if you had the same people that were there for you.
So do you think your experience that you've had in getting help for yourself has shaped what you may want to do?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. This is the most important thing to me, and I want to be able to give back to this whole community.
Go ahead, Lon.
Yeah, are you gonna continue your blog, because you write very well?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I will actually be taking a break for a little bit as I transition to my school, so that I can focus on that and being a normal teenager for a little bit, but I'm hopefully going to start up again.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I'm kind of curious, what are some of the, maybe you can help and share a little bit in these last minutes of some of the challenges that, you know, you have faced now that you're back home, or that you anticipate facing, and what might other people know that might help them face those challenges?
I mean, there have been situations since I've been home where I've been put around substances, and it went way differently than I expected. I was offered weed, and I was like, oh, no, I don't do that stuff anymore. And this kid totally backed off. He was like, oh, okay, you're not into that? And I was like, no. And he's like, so are you sober? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, that's actually cool. And I was like, oh, thanks. He's like, yeah, I don't know anyone that could say that they were sober. And I was like, yeah. And so I think it's just like, I presented it with that I was confident in myself and sure of myself that I didn't want to do it. But I think I know from when I was in that point when I was using and things like that, I always thought that sober people thought that they were better than I was. So I think it's just being confident and sure of yourself, but not acting preachy is something that I had to figure out how to balance, because I'm not trying to tell anyone else whether or not to be sober, but for me it's the right choice.
Was it hard to do?
I mean, that was not the first time that I've been placed. I've been offered it several times, on visits and on things like that. Like, it's everywhere, but it actually wasn't that hard to do.
Have been hard to do earlier if you had had the mind for it before.
Yeah.
All.
Yeah, I just didn't want to, so I said no, and I think that that felt really good for me. And I like came home and I told my parents about it, and I was like, guys, this is so cool. I said no, and this guy like totally respected it, and they were like, oh my god.
So that was just a whole new thing for you. You just didn't expect that at all. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and also there's been the challenge of friends, because I left home with a large group of people that I spent time with, and that number dropped dramatically when I became sober. It was basically like I got the black plague, at least to the people that I was surrounding myself around. And so it's been hard this summer of figuring out who I actually want to keep in my life. And luckily I know no one at the boarding school that I'm going to, so I get to start completely fresh as this Emily. I don't have to worry about that stuff. But it's just been figuring out who I actually want to keep in my life and who cares about me as a person versus who just wants the old Emily to come back.
Go ahead, Lon.
Yeah, a little bit different direction. Are you going to continue to work with or support the Saving Teens?
I will always support Saving Teens. And I love Carrie. I love the program and everything that it does. Yes, I intend to stay in contact with Carrie and figuring out things that I can do. I love talking to people and I love writing, so anything I can do along those lines I'll always do for them.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm just one last question about the friends. I just wanted to get back to that. Did any of your old friends change any of their ways after looking at your experience, or have any of them stuck around as a friend of yours and maybe made some changes in their life?
I have a couple of friends that have made a difference in their life, but it wasn't necessarily because of what I went through. But we are still in contact. I am still friends with a couple of the people, and they are supportive of me, and I'm supportive of them. And it's been really nice seeing some of the people from home actually be different when I came back, because I was expecting everyone to be in the same place, and most of them were. But there were those couple people that care about me and I still care about very deeply that are in a different place, and it's been really great to have that.
Great. That's interesting. Good. And Carrie,
we have about three minutes.
I wanted to ask Carrie.
It's about time to wrap up, and I was going to probably same thing you had.
Yeah.
Carrie, talk a little bit more about Saving Teens and more specifically how people could support it if any are so inclined.
If you'd like to support Saving Teens, and if you'd like more importantly, or just as importantly, to read Emily's blog in its entirety, in one spot, you can go to www.savingteens.org. Emily is actually featured on our homepage, so you can click on our homepage or click under the Learning to Live Again tab on our menus on our website. You can also donate to Saving Teens through our website. There's a nice donate button that is that will bring you to a secure portal where you can help. And we're always looking for volunteers, whether you are a parent who has been through a journey and would like to share it with others, whether you have an amazing idea for a fundraiser that you would like to support. Saving Teens is always there to help. And if you're a professional who would like to get more involved with Saving Teens, you're welcome to call me at any time. Easy enough to contact me on the website in the Contact Us area or at c.weatherhead@savingteens.org. And we welcome any inquiries, and anybody who wants to learn more about what we do, please just contact us through the website, and we look forward to hearing from anybody who's interested in learning more.
Okay, well, Emily, do you have any final comments? Because we've down to about just a minute or two.
If your kid needs help, or if there's a kid listening to this that thinks you may need help, you should get it, because it makes a really big difference. And it is,
in other words, things
so
don't have
it.
To be miserable.
Yeah, they really
nice.
Don't.
Well, Emily, thank you so much. I think you're really an exceptional young lady, and we wish you all the best in your future and boarding school, and hopefully at some point when maybe we're doing some Saving Teen stuff, I'll be able to meet you. But really, thank you for taking the time today to share your story and to be so open. I hope some people maybe have gotten some encouragement, and maybe you've also set some people's fears at ease too about the experience. So thank you so much.
And thank you for
thank
me
you
too,
for
Emily.
Me.
You're very
Emily.
Impressive.
Thank you for sharing your summer with me. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend time with you working on your blog. So thank you, and good luck in a couple weeks. I'm sure you're going to do wonderfully.
And Carrie, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it and appreciate learning a little bit more, or sharing with our audience a little bit more about Saving Teens. And I know the organization is very grateful to have somebody like you with them, with your amazing organizational skills and the passion that you have for this. So we appreciate your time too.
Yeah, and I thank you too, Carrie. And we just about run out of time. This is Lon Woodbury with co-hosting Assist by Liz McGee. Been talking with Emily and Carrie Weatherhead. Where'd I get that? The topic, Learning to Live Again, One Girl's Journey Towards Recovery, and it's an extension of Emily's blog, but this is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices, Parent Resources for Struggling Teens. I want to thank you very much. We'll be back next Monday with another guest.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.